Thanks so much. Can you all hear me okay? Yeah, excellent. I really wish I could have been there in person. The energy just seems so brilliant tonight. And yeah, unfortunately, with the storm up here in Galway, we were hit pretty hard. But I'm glad to still be able to be here virtually. So big thanks to Paul for the invitation as well. It's such an honor just to be able to read. I'll mostly tonight be reading from this little chapbook here, Soil Called a Country. It was just released last month, about a month ago. So yeah, it's just to give a little bit of an introduction. This poetry book is based mostly in the Amer like the location of it. Was written in the American West in California, where I lived for many years, and so it really explores, I think, that connection to place, but through the lens of the Chinese diaspora. I think I was trying to tell an alternative history of the American West, one that's not often told in history books. And so I do that by weaving together like familial, historical, archival, and kind of speculative poems that try to narrate or re-narrate some of those lost stories. And yeah, I hope you enjoy some of the poems here. I'm going to begin with one titled Invocation in the Trinity Alps. How could I believe in the Holy Trinity when I never did believe in nuclear family? Mother, father, child. Even God in his youth had two fathers, a too young mother, and three sage elders who crossed unlit lands by night. Did they smuggle their spiced and strong-scented gifts through customs too? When one salty passage stripped life down to three ventricles, mama, baba, me, we folded the past like a secret inheritance, though we had no family heirlooms, no prized possessions, just the gnawing of ghosts, ox boys with ears pressed to schoolroom walls, opium eaters and their smoke dreams, their pawn books, nameless daughters with vats of dark brine. They too hankered for our future with the persistence of those who make feasts from vine and cloven hooves, blood of waterfowl and roots dug from hillsides. Of course, they withstood the journey, though we imagined them too heavy with history to fly. When we unpacked our bags on an island called Paradise, out with the knotted socks and shirts tumbled their little hopes and jealousies, their rage and fevered silences. So we swallowed them. Now we feed our bellies to keep the spirits full. And in this collection, in a number of the poems, I channeled the voice of a woman known as China Mary. She was someone that I encountered on a road trip when I was in Arizona. And she seemed like a really colorful figure. She was sort of, she sort of ran this town in the south of Arizona near the Mexico border. And what was unique about her was that she was buried in Arizona, where the bones of many Chinese immigrants in this era, which was like in the late 1800s, would have been sent back to China. And so I was really intrigued by her. I started trying to look her up, and there was very little information. But I did find out that China Mary was actually a common nickname given to many different women of Chinese origin in this time. And so to me, she kind of became an every woman, and her voice, it just really seemed like it wanted to speak. And so, yeah, a number of these poems are written in her voice. And this one is titled The Burial of a Woman Known as China Mary. Tombstone, Arizona, December 1906. Take my bones, girl. Soak them in brandy. When they gleam like the pearled vertebrae of some native creature, coyote or her patient prey, wrap me in a fine silk brocade, the color of our secret moon, of mutton fat jade nursing at my wrists, of these side sleeper hills at dawn, Hills so close we might run and be free in them. Once I offered pieces of myself to every man, my hands, my coins, my words. I traded my name for honor, and they called me Mary, like their placid goddess. Was she not matriarch to whores and wanted men too? Now, flesh scrubbed bare, I let this land claim me, this land that has stripped me down to my convictions. So, plant me deep, girl, to feed my thousand sons and daughters. Root me here and here and here into this hard dirt between the Ocotillo and creosote. When I burst into crop, gather my bounty. The next one that I'll read is called In the Country of Their Kitchen, and it's sort of an old ode to my parents' kitchen. So, in the country of their kitchen. It's not the eating, but the cooking, not the task, but the choreography, not so much elegant as furious, for the country of my parents' kitchen is full of strife. I dreamed Baba held a gun, but here he wields a cleaver, transforming any knotted growth into translucent slivers, muscle into petal, tuber into snow. While Mama throws dried seed pods into hot oil where they bloom with scent and heat that would make a sensitive crowd gasp for breath. It is hard to look trouble in the eye, to unearth the ordinary traumas of all our accumulated decades. So they orchestrate a ceremony of fury, gut the croaker, hack a chicken's carcass into tender hunks. Pound aromatics of ginger and garlic with the flat face of carbon steel. This boy can slice, his stern father once said in passing approval, and Baba took it to heart with pride. He was three while a nation starved, men, women, children, chewing bark, chomping grass. Then the hushed reports of broken taboo, a hamlet that was still eating well, the canteen somehow still serving meat buns. Who has died? Who has fattened? Who has fed upon who? Baba hasn't cried since he was 18, not even when his father passed. Thus the pressure cooker's shrill siren, thus Mama's spatula tossing with frenzy. There is no talk, no exhumation, no recovery. Just the chopsticks rooting for sharp bits, spines of fish we push aside, or complaints we lodge under each other's skin. We feast until our tongues and gums and bellies are torched, then cool them upon platters of ovary carved from the flowering pear or vine-plucked melon. Again and again, for hours each day, this country is lit with fire. So I grew up in Hawaii, beautiful island called Paradise, as I said in Invocation, the first poem. And so this poem kind of goes back to that place and to my childhood. And it's also a botanical epistle. So this collection also has a number of letters essentially written to plants as a way of kind of excavating histories of, in some poems of violence, but here of tenderness that maybe don't get unfolded in other ways, right? So I'm interested in this kind of rooting into landscape of our histories. And so these botanical epistles sort of became a way of doing that. And this one is titled Wai'a'ui, and Wai'a'ui is the mountain guava. Oh, Wai'a'ui. All they want to hear is our trauma, the stories that have hardened us. But I want to talk about the skins we split with our new teeth, the pulpy flesh we slurped from mountain guavas plucked off the wild brush, Mama filling bags heavy with foraged fruit, the car steaming, sugar-lipped, strawberry sweet. A wire-wee of wag ragtag potlucks and afternoon rambles, aunties cradling bowls of sausage-spangled sticky rice and pitchers of homemade milk tea, uncles in aloha shirts trading jokes, helping to extend the reach of our small hands that grasped for the highest fruit. Us kids amok over the hillsides, so sure of this world's abundance. And look, there on the thicket's edge, Mama and Baba, rouge stained, laughing. I'm gonna just read three more poems, and these are not in the chat book, but they're, I guess newer poems, and maybe they will go into another collection that might be in the works. And so the first one is called Cóisiúrgó, and that's where I live. I live west of Galway, in the Cóisiúrgó Gaeltacht. Cóisiúrgó. We are a country of immigrants, I hear Cahill say at the garage where we buy a used car, silver Prius like we had back home. Hurtling down the motorway, low-slung city already behind us, I realize that he's not talking about coming, but leaving. I have left many places, and in each and every one of them, whole lives could be spent, potting peppers next to a shingled house, circled by parading cats and lit by the fire of orange clock vines in bloom, or drying apricots on a tin roof above blue trimmed windows dressed in lace and potted geraniums. Yet I could live another lifetime here, where the dippers gather in late October in their dry robes and swim caps, like puffins skirting a seaweed-wrecked shore, where the shops and buses have human names, Matt O'Flaherty, Pater Og. When Enda's cousin passes, too young, the road is lined with lanterns down from the packed church up to the boreen of her house. All night, gale storms lash our cottage. We sway in the sonorous belly of a great blue whale, hollow, warm. When my time is done, will a trail of candles be lit for me along the winding coast road to guide my spirit home toward the sea, a silver-furred beast? And the second to last poem I'll read here is called Hibernal Lessons. It was written, I think, during a bit of a difficult time, and I was trying to feel my way through a lot that was going on, including having a newborn and what the future might hold. Thinking about that in terms of that kind of I don't know, just the postpartum fog of things. So it's called Hibernal Lessons. The blackthorns are heavy with fruit this time of year, which, according to the old sayings, is sure sign of a hard winter ahead. What do I know of hard winters or their auguries? In the dimming of last September, in a city where we were passing strangers, ladybugs nudged their way through our sealed windows before the freeze. We eased them back out with cupped hands, believing somehow this was an act of mercy. I want you to know there is such a thing as mercy, but I look down and see my fingernails overgrown and brittle. Somewhere down an alley is a lone car on ice, wheels in motionless spin. In my darkest hours, I don't believe in respite, just the long gun barrel of time. 1,000 years bracing against parched winds and the ancient bristle cones of Death Valley are gone too. Blame a man-made drought and beetles riding the global supply chain, but I don't want to be needle-leafed, heartwood so tightly wound just to live for millennia. I want to go from flourish to flourish so that even in December, the birds may feast. Thanks so much. The last poem that I'll read is called New Cold War. And it was written also, I think, in a time of feeling a lot of political helplessness, watching different things unfold in the world. And it is a feeling that I think echoes today, every day, every year. But it very much, I very much grapple a lot in my poetry and in my academic work with what it means to be an immigrant in a settler colonial nation. And I write a lot about settler colonialism across different contexts in, Xinjiang, which is part of Central Asia that's controlled by China. And I think these days we're all thinking a lot about what's happening in Gaza. And so I wanted to read this poem to kind of reflect on that. It's called New Cold War. Some days are stretched so taut, it feels like changing might break us. Nowhere to go, we walk woodland paths between neighborhoods, on and on, for as long as we can bear the bone hollow cold. Through the trees, glancing at homes, lawn, deck, siding, repeat. The ashes have shed all their leaves, while the maples still cling to the last frail reds. Stark persimmons, ember studded, have been plundered by foxes who leave behind nothing but trails of dense seeded scat. My palms upward cupped, I wait for something to fall, waiting as another pale afternoon too quickly shades to dusk. These days we feed the baby bitter melon, flower pepper, blood root beet. Flavors of our distant homelands. When will he know their humid, peopled heat or see the midnight sun's red core? Overhead, the sky is impassive, a canvas or a shroud. This nation, a rent, a great tear-shaped tear through which a clawed menagerie flies. Crows, magpies, and wild geese off to winter somewhere, not here. Look, every day is a chance to hurtle from the warm burrow of ourselves, ragged breath, body raging, to count our dead, abolish borders, close the prisons, give back the land. There are no euphemisms for violence worth believing in this homeland or that. The first snow comes in January, fresh gauze over an old wound. The persimmon only ripens after the first freeze. Thanks so much.